An Intimate Evening with Dave and Frosty brings you
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City. It is a Dave and Frosty late night special. And not really late night, but it's late night for me because I'm a dad. So
it is. It's just the two of us though, which is... It must have been a long time since it's been a two-man Phoenix City.
Oh, I don't know if there ever has been. I think it's only ever been a TW goat, probably.
Yeah, but so we obviously Patrick's busy this week and then Cam's at home sick. But the two-man episode is sponsored, so...
Oh, true, yes.
Phoenix City this week brought to you by Cool Moves.
Yep,
you were just telling me how great they are.
I was, actually. They've moved me twice, and they were fantastic both times. A lot of work that I did not have to do.
Yep, I reckon they're probably the only moving company I've used in the last 10 years, and they've been excellent every time. And since they're sponsoring us, I will let all you listeners know that if you mention Yellow Fever or you've got a Phoenix membership, when you're booking in with them, they will give you a bit of a discount because Rod is a GC, basically. That's, yeah, pretty much all there is to it.
Yep, so mention the Knicks or specifically Yellow Fever and ask for Rod. That's enough of a plug for us. We're obviously new to this sort of commercial activity. So let's just get on to the other big stuff. The Knicks played.
Yeah.
It was an all right result, wasn't it?
It was. You've kind of nailed it right off the bat. We actually played some football. It was very nice to see.
Yep. I thought it was pretty interesting too. Let's obviously get to the crux of it. Played Sydney at Jubilee Stadium and beat them 3-1 and pretty much beat them in the first half.
Yep, absolutely. And we never looked like we were particularly struggling. Once we were a few goals ahead, it was a relative cruise with a few, you know, slightly dicey moments. But we looked pretty comfortable in the leading position, which was nice.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, dicey times are pretty standard in the A-League. So
yep.
We coped with them. There was really only one shot, I think, by Sydney should have been a goal, I think, was the Lafondra flash over from 6 yards.
Oh, yeah, yep.
But the nice early scoring from Krishna on the 21st minute and also the 30th, that really put the cat amongst the pigeons. And Taylor capped it off on the 38th minute. All three coming from pretty much, I want to say, good coaching. I feel like this is a good read. Krishna's first goal was on a platter from Singh.
Yep.
Drifted it probably drifted out a little bit to the left and just dinked a ball in behind, who's the Sydney, Van der Linden?
I honestly can't remember who they have in there.
It's their import centre-back who is a big unit but turns like an oil tanker. Krishna dipped in behind him. Zolo, I think, was on the other side, wasn't aware, just got a nice little free run, even though he didn't control it particularly well. He got two touches. Redmayne was in no man's land, decided to kind of come out halfway, and Krishna slotted from the top of the box. I thought that was pretty well taken.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's good to see us finishing some of those chances because we've certainly seen a bit of wastefulness in previous games, and it's everything kind of came together nicely here. I think they underestimated us a little there, gave guys like Krishna a bit too much space, which, I mean, you look at the form that he has been playing under and you'd have to say, telling your central defenders, give him a little bit of room, he's not going to be a problem for you. Might not have been the worst shout in some of the previous games, but it clearly came to bite them today. Well, this game, not today.
It's interesting that you mention a bit of ruthlessness. I thought that basically we had three decent chances, those three, and we nailed all three.
That's exactly right.
And I think that is something we haven't seen from the Phoenix all season.
Yeah, completely agree. It was pretty clinical up front, which we definitely haven't seen. But I think the thing I actually take the most from this game is how good we looked at the back. I think there's an argument that can be made that in winning this game, we actually were a little lucky. I think we were dominant for long periods, but if we had performed up top like we have the rest of the season so far, we might well have been coming away with a 1-0 loss just because we hadn't been able to score our chances and gave away a slightly jammy one at the other end. Obviously, that didn't happen. We took early chances and that's great. But I think the thing I took the most from was how decent we looked at the back as well. We didn't look like we were going to give up many chances, and we certainly didn't give up many good ones, which is really promising. So long as we can keep actually scoring some goals up top, I'm not so worried about us conceding at the back, because we look much more secure than we have there for a long time this season compared to previous ones where we constantly look like we're about to leak three.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that there was a bit of the fact that we scored not just two but three early goals meant that Sydney had to chase a lot more, and so they opened up a bit more space in midfield, and that left us able to counterattack into space a little more, or go into space a little more, which made it a bit easier for the back group, because if they could defend and turn the ball over, we could get it up the other end of the field, and then we're not turning over and out, you know, our half. Christian's second goal in the 30th minute was almost a carbon copy. This time from Mundy, almost a little more direct, I think. This time the Sydney centre back has again turned like an oil tanker. Christian has nipped in. I think it was Zulu again, was more aware this time, but he couldn't get in front of Krishna. So basically, there was a bit of contact that Krishna rode really, really well. Fair contact, I should add. But he's ridden that off really nicely and almost used it to bounce off Zulu and get a couple of touches and roll it past Redmayne again. Great little play. I think I'm glossing over the fact that, again, this along with the Taylor goal on the 38th minute, which again was an early ball in from the middle third. So all three of them, early balls in from the middle third, right through the channel between the two centre backs. Great deliveries. Fantastic passes.
Three really, really good balls.
And which is, you know, credit to their execution. But you've got to say that this is obviously a game plan and that Rudan deserves a lot of credit for picking this out and going, these centre backs cannot turn and they cannot man mark.
No, that's exactly right. I think it was clearly a plan, and it worked three times in quick succession, and Sydney didn't adapt to what we were doing there. And obviously they made some changes, but they also had to make changes in order to try and chase the game as well, which in many ways it's a credit to them that they didn't end up leaking more at the back, having to chase the way they did. But, you know, we had a tactic, it worked, and we executed it perfectly. I think in some ways it's a really good sign that Roy's hitting form at just the right moment when we're getting some of that execution coming through the midfield as well, because we've seen some of these tactics. You know, we've talked before about long balls from the midfield, and it just hasn't looked right. This week it really, really worked. The execution of those balls was much, much better. Whether that was because of the tactical stuff they talked about behind the scenes, or whether it's just those guys getting on the same wavelength as the strikers a bit better and all that kind of stuff just gelling, it kind of doesn't matter because it worked.
Yeah, I think your point about execution is very true. Obviously the first two balls that were to Krishna were in behind, but they were ostensibly along the ground, which suits Krishna down to the ground. Kikacho's ball, when Taylor was already up, I think it was a free kick, I think, beforehand,
he
stayed up. And I'm going to have to give Kikacho a bit of credit here that he's realised it's Taylor that's up. And so he's hit that ball hard, high and flat, and really got a hell of a curl on it and stuck it basically almost onto Taylor's head for him. And all he had to do was try and hit it towards
him. Put his face through it.
Yeah, basically.
My favourite part of this goal is that Taylor doesn't realise it's gone, and he's absolutely smashed it into the back of the net, and he's on the ground facing the wrong way because of just how much effort he's put into it and how he fell. And it's not till he is getting back up that he looks in the goal and sees it's there and gives a little fist pump, because he's like, I know I've hit that, but where the hell did it go?
He definitely he was running full tilt and throwing his head at it. It was a lot of body behind that ball. Kikache's ball from that deep, I mean, he was only 5 yards in front of the halfway, and he's just hit it with curl. It was almost going laterally by the time it got to Taylor. It was fantastic.
Off the foot initially think, oh no, the defender's getting that, and then it just curls perfectly and defender's got no chance. And I mean, Taylor basically can't miss it. It's a magic ball.
we saw a bit more of the high press again.
Yep.
So for the second week running, I mean, we spoke about earlier on in the season that they were more than willing to play very deep and try and counter. To me, it feels like maybe Rudan has parked that and decided that's not the way to play in it.
Yeah,
or do you think it was more tactics against those two teams?
It's hard to say. I think the change in personnel and bringing Kopchinski into the game has clearly had an effect on that. I think maybe that change in personnel has made him more comfortable with a high press. I'm not quite sure what it is, because clearly, as you say, it's been 2 weeks in a row, but we've seen Kopchinski sitting in that different role that I think at the start of the season when we were talking about him, we never would have seen him in this role. This is not a position we were considering him playing at all, but it looks good, and I think it's working, and that might be the kind of key that's unlocked this high press working,
yeah.
And being an option, I guess.
I totally agree. I think it's really it allows us to play four lines in effect, and that pushes Mundy or Rufa up higher. We're seeing Mundy getting shots off and making good passes, yep. Playing basically facing forward whenever he's got the ball. And I think we're seeing, you know, that the upbringing he's got, ball at feet. He's actually pretty sharp. Mm. He can hit a good pass. He can certainly hit a long pass, and he can take a shot given enough time. And that's something, you know, for a centre mid, take that every day.
Yep, great. It's an interesting one with Kopchinski, how we were talking much earlier in the season about not really seeing it at all. He's put in some very good performances. I mean, he made team of the week for the A-League this week.
I think that might have been a bit much, but
I agree, but I wouldn't have him in my team of the week, that's for sure. But we've definitely seen more out of him. He looks more like a professional footballer than some of those early performances where going, what the hell have we done here? This seems like a terrible decision. We're actually seeing a footballer in there who knows what he's doing, and it's helping us a lot. Whether he's best player on the park, I don't know, but he's certainly growing into the game, and I hope we see more of that. If he keeps developing at this pace from where we did see him to now, I mean, hell, he'll be setting the league alight by the end of the season.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's something that's quite interesting for me, because he's playing this position that really isn't a position I've seen played before.
No.
Maybe in the Barca style, someone like Busquets, pushing in and out. But you have to be a pretty technically astute player, I think, to be able to do that, to be able to read the game well enough to know when to move up and down.
Yep.
And we saw him there was a through ball I think he basically got back to and just basically cut it off before it popped to one of their attackers and just nodded it out. And he got back really well behind the rest of our back line.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It shows that he's reading the play nicely and kind of making a hell of a lot of progress, I think.
It's a thing that, as you say, is a very technical role they're asking him to do there. And generally speaking, defenders in the A-League haven't been highly technical players, but we're seeing him do that quite well, which is nice. I don't know that it's a role he's accustomed to at all, but he's clearly executing it all right for now. It'll be interesting to see if teams figure something out around that and start trying to exploit it, because there is an unfamiliarity to it, and we'll see if someone can, you know, unlock a key to getting through us there, but no one's done it yet.
No, I mean, I don't think I've seen it outside Barcelona's very fluid triangle style. Yeah. And when you see something that's that unusual, it almost feels like it's going to take half a season for anyone to work out where the where the edges are, let alone work out where the kinks are that you can exploit. Yeah. So after
if we keep chopping and changing and trying new things there as well, we might not be doing it long enough consistently to figure it out, which would be great. I mean, we've certainly tried a few different formations and a few different tactics this season, which, I mean, you go back to the Phoenix of every other season, we're not known for chopping and changing things every week except for our bloody lineup. But we're seeing different formations come out there, we're seeing different tactics, and it's starting to get some results.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a good point. I can't recall the last time chopping and changing implies that you've got people that can technically execute different roles and different
tactics.
I think
an argument can be made to say we weren't executing it that well in some of these games, but
no.
The last two, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the we were just talking about, the ability to execute the tactics change with the long balls from the middle third. I mean, that's not an easy skill. That is not something you just pick up and go, oh, yeah, what the hell, I'll just knock it up. So that's really good. I honestly can't think of anything. Do we have anything bad to say about this game?
I do.
Okay.
My biggest concern remains that we continue to fade in second halves. We've seen that even in our bad performances, where the second half And there's been a few games where the first half's actually been pretty good, and then the second half we've just faded to nothing, whether it be conceding a goal at the wrong time and heads dropping, or even just a fitness issue. But we've absolutely seen us struggling in probably the last half an hour, reasonably consistently. The last half an hour here is where we looked under pressure. You know, we were up by a bunch of goals and we didn't really have any pressure on us, but we still looked a little shaky. You know, that's... It never looked like we were going to biff this away by conceding four, but it did look like a goal was coming, and it did. And you thought, oh, they might get two here. They might sneak back into this. And that's a worry. I don't think it's down to the substitutions we're making or necessarily fitness, but there's clearly something in the mentality that we're struggling to close out games. And that's a thing that might catch us at some point this season, particularly if we'd only scored, say, one out of those three chances, which is probably about what you'd expect in football. You know, finishing a third of your good chances is not an unreasonable number to expect. So if we were only up by one and we'd looked this shaky in the second half, you might well have been biffing this away 2-1. As it happened on this day, all of the good chances went in the back of the net. We were pretty comfortable in the end, but that still worries me a little closing it out.
Yeah, I think you've got a good point there. I haven't been that concerned about it. Basically because I think it's confidence. I think it's I think that there's different reasons why we've been fading in the final 30 in the previous games to these two.
Yep, I think that's probably true.
Yeah, I think that basically it's one, you know, those previous games we were down by a lot and it's hard to keep your head up when you're under the pump and you're down by a fair few. These ones we've been up or doing well for the previous 60 minutes, and I think... when you're up and you're getting into that closing the game out stage, you start becoming more consciously aware of, oh, we could win this. And that's when you're actually thinking about the game rather than playing the game. And I wonder if maybe it's a bit of that. Whereas, you know, if we can get another two solid games, regardless of results, where we can go, actually, we can do this. We can finish out a game after like that last one. We did enough.
Yep.
Have a reasonable result this one, then we're kind of like, actually, yeah, we can do this consistently now. And I think that might be it, but only time will tell.
Yeah, agree with that. I think there's definitely an element of that for sure. But if I was Rudan, that's a thing I would be worried about, or not worried, but working on for sure, making sure that we're holding that mentality together for 90 minutes. I mean, after that Perth result where you took a draw off the top team in the league, and then you're at the, you know, at halftime, you're up by three. Surely confidence should be riding high at that point. Surely that's the point where you should be going, we can do this. That, you know, you, by then you should have that self-belief. If we still don't have it when we're doing that, we need to find a way to make sure we are getting it, because it's going to be a problem if we can't close out games, because this is a tight league where every point matters. And, you know, the 2 points dropped in the Perth game could hurt, but probably not this early in the season. If we drop more points, though, in similar situations where we can see the late one, obviously we're down a man there, but, you know, a similar 1-0 lead that you biff away in the last 5 or 10 minutes could come back to hurt us.
Yeah, totally. For me, it's I don't know that confidence would be there, just because they haven't actually really played a game where they've played well and finished out well.
Yeah,
and I think that finishing
skill set.
Well,
we still haven't seen that.
No, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the finishing skill set they'll be mindful of and be thinking, oh, how do we close this out without changing our game plan, or with, you know, going to a game plan that we trust in ourselves.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we'll only find that out if and when it actually happens.
Yep. Good to see Roy scoring goals, though. That's one thing I will say. I mean, he's broken the record, and then he's gone out and put another two in the back of the net. We've talked very early this season about how we need one of those strikers to get some confidence and start banging them in. Roy looks like he might be hitting that, so let's hope that continues, because a goal every week from Roy goes a long way to us making the six pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I suspect that, I mean, if Rudan's smart – for this game plan in the next, say, week or two, he's got to be thinking about, how can I get Nathan Burns involved a lot more? Because as much as Krishna's a confidence player in that, he's now going to be attracting a truckload of attention from those centre backs. If he's anywhere near the centre stripe right through the middle, he's going to have two centre backs crawling up his jacksie. And that's... So we've got to have Burns actually start to get himself into good positions to take advantage of, you know.
Agree. And I think the big thing for him will be scoring one. I think he's been in good positions and he's just lacking that confidence on the final touch. You know, he's
He's streaky as fuck.
Absolutely should have scored a few already, and the confidence just isn't quite there. But I think once that first one rolls in, and as you say, with him getting a bit more space, with Roy attracting some more attention, he's going to have more chances coming. Let's hope these games against CCM and Brisbane, which should be easier games, is where he manages to bang one and get his head up and, you know, that monkey's off his back, I guess.
Speaking of lack of ruthlessness, we can move swiftly on to the rest of the A-League. I don't know if you saw much of this, Dave.
I didn't.
Oh, my God. There were some stinkers involved. Let's move on to the first one. The Wanderers versus the Mariners at Spotless. That actually was more spotless, apart from the spotty bits on the pitch and the big chunk where they'd re-turfed and the bobbling ball right through the middle of the field. And apart from that, it was great.
Yeah, it's fair to say no one wants to be using that stadium anymore. The sooner that new one can be ready to go, the happier a lot of people, including travelling opposition, will be.
Yeah, I think someone posted an RBB statement from a week or so ago going on about the management just holding on until the new stadium's built, and it certainly feels like that looking at that stadium. It's a yeah. dog. Unfortunately, the football wasn't a tremendous amount better. There wasn't West Sydney Wanderers won 2-0. Backus pinning one in the in injury time in the first half, 49th minute, and Soterio just rounding it out, 68th minute. Only thing of note, apart from the scrappiness of the game, and I do mean scrappy, it was all over the place, they had 6 yellows.
Wow.
But 3 of them came inside 5 minutes, right towards the end of the first half. Hmm. Just, I don't know what the hell they were thinking. They were just bad, just not thinking.
That's interesting. I think 5 and you get a please explain.
Well, it was 6 across the 2 teams, but it was 4 in the first half. I mean, who picks up 4 yellows in the first half?
Yeah, that's true.
You normally get a free run in the first half with A-League refs.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, 1 or 2 in the first half feels above average.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, as you say, a yellow card challenge or, you know, time wasting or whatever in the second half is a very different threshold to the first half.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But my main takeaway from this was the Mariners are not offering anything in particular. They look a bit toothless. And, of course, now they've lost Donovan.
Yep.
He's been apparently sent home to his parent club because I believe he's on loan rather than contracted because his injury is sufficient that they're concerned about his long-term welfare.
I think they said he'd be back before Christmas, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's going home just for a medical assessment.
Around Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
Sure. Okay.
Those fancy doctors over there.
Yeah. Because, you know, two 24-hour flights in a short space of time are fantastic for an injury.
Yeah.
Things that we know. So that was 2-0 to the Wanderers. Then it was victory versus Adelaide, referred to as what, the oldest derby?
It's the original derby?
Original derby? Yeah, that sounds about right. That was at Marvel Stadium. Yes, Marvel as in the comic books.
We discussed this last week.
I know.
Did you not listen to the podcast?
I did, and I was sitting there going, no, surely not. Surely it's, and it
should,
is.
Should we comment on the feud that you're also refusing to comment on then?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, I don't listen to him. I fast forward his bit, so.
Fair.
Victory playing Adelaide. Victory pegged it 2-0 as well. Barbarossa in the 62nd minute, and in the 81st minute, Ola Toivonen. That's right. You see any of this?
No. I only saw our game. Oh, so I can offer enough. You nothing.
Well, I shall carry this then.
As you have been doing very adequately.
Thanks, mate. Ola Toivonen was fantastic. He's a bit of an old school striker, a big unit, but his touch is good, his pass is good, and he works so hard. The goal that he scored was not, unfortunately, a centre forward's goal. He got a little out wide and lumbered his way up unopposed, and then just dragged it in and curled it. Oh no, that wasn't. He didn't score that one. I take it back. But it was certainly a slow motion wide striker's attempt.
And, they all count the same, though. You take those.
Yeah. No, the goal he did score was into traffic in the inside the box. But there was. Really, I think the setup for that was a back heel by Antonis in the box.
I have seen highlights of that. Very nice little back heel.
Yeah, it was just like, Yeah, I think
I mean, you still get fined for those. You're not allowed to back heel in the A-League.
Pulled it off nicely. It was played for and got, and it was perfect. And it's like, you know, everyone's going to try a back heel next week, and it's just going to be carnage. If my indoor teammates hears this, Todd, don't fucking back heel. Never gets it right.
Shout out to Todd.
Yeah. I yell at him all the time, and he just keeps on going, sorry. Anyway. Barbarossa's goal was just a nice little tidy put away, but again, it was a good little scrap, but in two reasonable teams. But
yeah,
there was a degree of a lack of ruthlessness. It just felt like they were not making the most of their opportunities, but they weren't cut and dried opportunities in this game. At least it was kind of like, you know, they were half chances and the ball falling and, you know, that sort of thing. And both keepers actually did quite well, I thought. There was a couple of nice stops, but you know, that's why they get paid the big bucks.
Speaking of keepers, actually, we didn't talk about Ollie for us. Ollie was quite good once again.
Solid.
Yeah. We talked about him the previous week, you know, looking a little less than confident when he's coming out and clearing up. The same was true, but again, didn't miss a single one, cleared them well. You know, it wasn't the prettiest thing you've ever seen when he was sweeping up, but did everything he needed to do every time he needed to do it.
I'm going to take issue with that. I think that he did look confident doing it. Because at no stage did he ever second guess himself. When he decided to go, he went.
Yep.
And to me, that's a confident thing. We might not have confidence.
I think it was confident decision making. I don't know that he was quite so confident in his own touch. Some of the actual kicks looked a little awkward when he was coming out. But
I think he
absolutely put his boot through it, and you know that's all that needed doing.
For me, I thought it was actually quite fine because one of the things I liked about when he was getting to it, he was not sticking it straight up the middle of the field.
No.
He was either sticking it towards the corners or he was just sticking it straight out. And I think that's the key. As soon as you're outside that box.
Absolutely. Out of play was the right option. Yeah. That's where he went most of the time with those ones. It's an awkward half volley or something. And it's like, I'm not trying to do anything pretty here. We're just putting my laces for it.
Yeah.
Fine.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. I think that his... He looked solid when the ball was, you know, when it came to the shot stopping.
Yep.
He got his hands in it nicely, really good body position. There were a couple of ones where he had to make a stop from reasonably close, got himself nice and big.
Caught a couple of crosses quite nicely. I think he was good. I am not concerned about having him in there for a few weeks while Curto gets right.
Yep.
That doesn't worry me at all.
No, I think he actually adds a bit that Curto can't do with his ability to, well, his... willingness to sweep up. It means that we can play our lines collectively a lot higher, even though we've got two slower centre backs. I don't know how quick Copper is, whether he'd be required to turn and chase.
Yeah, I don't think he's slow, but I wouldn't call him the quickest either. I think he's somewhere in that mid range. But
yeah, I don't know that Taylor and. Especially Jura are going to trouble the scorers when it comes to the 50-yard turn and sprint. So, back to the rest of the A-League. We had Melbourne City playing Perth at NIB, and Perth pegged it 1-0. Konomidis, tucking away a bit of a scrappy one. Again, this one was strange. You know, two teams that I thought, you know, they're towards the top end of the table. City have been a little out of form, and you know, I mean, let's face it, with the rumours that are swirling around their team and their coach, you know, maybe there's a bit of disharmony there. But Perth, nothing like that.
I think there's definitely disharmony there. I mean, if you're sitting Bruno out, who's not injured, some shit's going down for sure. I mean, he's one of the league's best strikers, and you're just sitting him in the stands.
Yeah, that does not make sense to me. I did hear that he'd been offered a place on the bench and just turned it down. So there's obviously a bit of disharmony both directions here.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
He was definitely missed in this game. It was a little all over the place. Again, like the victory game, it didn't feel like they were particularly ruthless at all. But the goal was a bit of scrappy.
Yeah, I've seen the highlights of this. It didn't seem like a good goal by any stretch.
No,
lucky more than anything.
Yeah, it just popped to him and he was unmarked and just kind of poked it from 6 yards. But what got me was that you had City chasing the game, only one down, and Curtis Good goes and – did you see the tackle?
Yep. Insane.
He's already on a yellow. The ball is almost out, and he's slid in late after it's gone out over the ball and cuts, I can't remember who, down. for no reason.
There was nothing to gain from this at all. It's just dumb. I mean, it's
a coach killer.
The ball is so easily gone, and it's just stupid. And I mean, it's two-footed. He doesn't get anywhere near the ball. It's just stupid.
Yeah, what did I call it? A brain explosion. Yep. I think that's the nicest thing you can say. I mean, you're only one down. You've still got 10 minutes plus injury time left, and you go and basically cut your team down, them off at the knees. It's just, oh my God. It irks me. If I'd been coaching that team, he'd probably never play again. It's just, and to be fair, it sounds like he might not anyway, because I don't know what the hell is going on in City at the moment. The rumors of Bratton, Fornaroli, and one other player who are all got the pip with the coach. Fornaroli wouldn't be a bad option over here.
His name's been bandied about for us for sure. But I think the suggestion is that he's mostly got the huff because they wouldn't sell him in the off season. He had a big money offer for Asia has been the suggestion. But equally, other people have suggested it's to go to Sydney. Who knows?
But why would Sydney want him? They've got Lafondra there.
Well, at the point this off season offer existed, not have. And he got the huff because they wouldn't let him go when he wants to go.
Right.
Now they're not going as well, and he still wants out. You know, he's like, well, I want out in the January window. Then I would suggest they've now said we're not going then either. And he's gone, all right, then I'm not playing. Essentially, or something along those lines. He's definitely got the huff because they wouldn't let him go. I don't know if he's got all these big money offers that we're necessarily the ones to pick him up.
And also whether they're going to be there in January is the interesting thing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, let's face it, you sit down for two-thirds of a season, it is not putting yourself in the shop window.
No, well, it's our best hope of getting him if we were looking at that be that scenario.
Yeah, certainly a six-month, you know, a half-season deal to get him on the shop front just to get an option out to Asia. Well, that wouldn't be the worst thing for either
party.
And I mean,
short of us signing some kind of marquee level striker, he is a tried and tested A-League goal scorer.
Would he qualify under like a marquee B or something, you know, with a B?
I honestly don't know, but maybe. You might get a small contribution, which would be nice, but even if we don't, you know, at least you know what you're getting with him. You know he performs in this league, whereas a marquee B striker, you just don't know. You might think you're going to get a bunch of goals out of them, but you know we've seen a lot come in and fail to score.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think because he's proven and his name's known, I would have thought that we'd get a little bit of cash if we could get him. The problem is getting him.
Yeah.
Whether he's going to want to come, I would think that it would be Rudan's name that would be the only thing that would get him here at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the big thing will be that have the offers dried up. Is there somewhere else that's still chasing him? If there's not, I think we become a reasonably attractive option, particularly if we're still playing as well as we are.
And it's a good way to stick it to City.
Absolutely.
You play for a nothing team and you get up and score a goal against them, I think fingers would be raised. So moving on to ignoring the fingers raised comment. The final game of the round was Newcastle versus Brisbane, and Newcastle got back on the winning bus.
Yep.
2-0. Kane Shepherd, not Kate Shepherd, scoring in the 46th minute, and Jair in the 58th. This was so scrappy. This was just two teams that...
It's interesting. I've only seen the goals, and they looked like quite nice goals, to be honest, which made me think, oh, maybe this was an all right game of football.
No. Shepherd's one... Yeah, that was...
Comes across at the front post, he gets good foot on it. It's just, you know, good, clean goal.
Yeah, it was just a bit of a... That actually wasn't too bad, but there was a bit leading up to that okay. wasn't so fabulous.
And then the second one's a nice ball kind of laid across at the top of the box and an absolute treat of a finish into the top corner.
I am not having that nice ball. He underhit that pass so
short. Yeah, but the finish makes up for it, right?
Oh, who when he's struggling to score after a year goes, I'm going to lace this straight into the top corner.
But he absolutely nails it, right?
I wonder.
You watch that and go, oh, yeah, that's pretty nice. But you put the context around it, you go, oh, there's some confidence there, or you've thought, screw it, let's just see what happens.
Or he was aiming at another corner and just completely ballsed it and just went, yeah, I'll take it. Again, the finishing in this game. Do you see Redenton's?
Oh, yes, I have seen that as well, actually.
My God. Just for those that didn't see it, right at the very end of the game, someone's made a break up the right-hand wing and has pulled it back basically to the penalty spot where Matthew Redenton has made the late run unmarked.
Open net in front of him.
Open net in front of him and has not made the decision which foot to kick the ball with.
No.
And just,
I don't even know if he really makes much contact with the ball in the end. He kind of falls right over it.
Yeah, it looked like he actually just knelt on the ball.
Yeah.
He just looked like, I don't want to hit it with my left. I've got my right foot down, so I don't want to hit it with my left. I want to get onto my right, but my weight's all on the wrong. Oh, it's here.
I honestly think if he just kept running, he almost would have made it a contact with the ball.
I was thinking exactly.
Or even if he just stopped and stood there and let it hit him.
Yes. I thought that it might just bobble off, but no, he knelt on it and then fell over. And
then he tries to play it off the ground and misses it entirely, and then it's gone. And you're like, you can just see the confusion on his face. And I'm like, I don't know how this has happened. All I had to do was get anything on this.
Yep. I have, what did I, in my notes, I called it a brain shard.
Oh, yeah, nice.
And that's, it honestly felt like that. It was not a happy moment for Mr. Redenton. I'm pretty sure he wanted the earth to swallow him quite convincingly.
Yeah, luckily they had the game put to bed at that point.
Yeah,
so it didn't matter for anything. But if that had been a nil all and that was the last touch of the game, then a little bit different.
Yeah, exactly. So just where that leaves the standings, we have on top Perth Glory on 17 points, Melbourne Victory 15, Sydney FC after that loss now struggling to keep in touch on 11, Adelaide on 11 also, Melbourne City on 10, and rounding out the top six is the Jets bursting their way in, and they pip both the Knicks and the Wanderers on goal difference, so all three on 8, then down to the Roar on 6, and at the bottom of the table, in real trouble here, I think, the Mariners on 2 points, so two full wins behind 8th place.
Yeah, it's a weird old table because I have no problem with who the top three are. I think that makes sense to me, but when we actually look at their performances, it doesn't feel like they're that solidly in front of the rest of the league. I think they have been the three best teams so far, but it feels like probably the top 7 or 8 sides are all kind of within touching distance of each other, really. Not in terms of points, but in terms of quality of the football they're putting out on the field, it doesn't feel like there's a big gap there. I think Perth have got all the points and they've done a good job of that, but they've looked shaky at points. I mean, we certainly made them look like they were very beatable. And you know, they got lucky to come away with a point against us. Same thing. We've obviously rolled Sydney. We made them look extremely shaky. The Victory aren't leading, showing they're not flawless, but they've probably looked the most kind of complete performers so far. When they've played well, it's looked reasonably unbeatable. They just haven't put it out there every week.
No, I think as much as they're talented lineups and look the most capable, I think they've been slightly consistent. They haven't looked.
That's all it is, yeah.
Yeah, they've been doing enough to get by, and I think that's probably a sign of a good team when you're just starting in a league with a long off-season.
Yep.
Maybe it takes a little bit of time to get that run up and start meshing, especially when you've got a whole lot of new players. And
and you can argue the same about us, but it looks like we're finally finding our feet, and it doesn't to me look like there's any team within that top 8 who couldn't make a top 6 at this point. You're not going, oh, they're falling out of touch. I think the Mariners, you can definitely say that about. I think the Wanderers, us, the Jets, it all looks like any of those teams. It's kind of anyone's game at this point. I think those ones who already have a bit of a lead have to do more to throw it away, but it could happen,
Yeah, I feel like there's the top 4 or 5 sides. So Perth, Victory, Sydney, Adelaide, Melbourne City have the firepower where they're not reliant on their goals coming from one or two places. They've got goals across the field, and I think that's probably key to them winning. You do enough at the back and just the goals get shared around a little bit or get set up around the place, and I think that's probably the key to their success at the moment. They haven't looked good. Whereas, you look at the Jets we know can play well. Yep. They did play well last season. It's the same team. But they just haven't managed to get their goals happening. There's been a little bit rusty and they're struggling to kind of get that consistency across the park.
Yeah, but I think if you look at Adelaide and particularly City, I can see the wheels falling off. I just can.
Really? Even Adelaide?
Less so with Adelaide, but absolutely with City. I mean, they might have all the big names and all the firepower, but there's clearly some problems within that squad. And if, you know, they end up having to change coach or there's some kind of mutiny, I can just see them just absolutely collapsing for a few rounds, and that could kill them.
I totally agree.
Similar problem with Adelaide. I agree that it's less likely to happen there. They have better options to keep scoring and keep that stuff happening. But a couple bad performances in this league can really hurt you. And suddenly you go from, you know, sitting reasonably comfortably in fourth and, you know, you're outside the six and having to chase some games in desperate need of points. And that's quite a different proposition. Whereas I think those teams sitting just outside the six at the moment, us included, aren't worried about our position. You know, we know we're starting a good run and we're used to being in that position on the table. I think if Adelaide find themselves down there, it's quite different for them. It's not a place they're comfortable. So we'll see. I think it feels, despite how far the league's come in the last, say, 4 or 5 years, it feels very close this year to how it has felt some seasons. We've gone, obviously, there's a top three who are just going to blow away with it. And, you know, it's down to them to fight it out for who wins. I look at the table and I look at the performances and think, oh, there's a long way to go this season. Could be anyone's.
For me, I kind of look at the bottom four. So the Wanderers, Knicks, Raw and Mariners and go, they're very limited in their goal scoring. Wanderers, it's been either Baumjohan or Riera,
yeah.
Getting their goals. And they've pretty much been the only two that look capable of getting their goals. So they've got two. The Knicks, we really only have Krishna. And we've struggled that way.
Currently, but if you look at tried and true A-League goal scorers, you've got Burns, you've got Nichols. Singh can come into his own at any time with some goals.
We have potential.
Mandy Shoney can score. And we certainly have an option on a set piece with Taylor up there now. I think at the moment I agree. Krishna is the one scoring them. But we have options there that could start firing at any moment.
But I think that's it. I think it's could.
Yeah.
And we look at the Raw, Taggart. That's it.
Yeah.
It's just Taggart.
Yeah.
And the Mariners, no one.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Without Donovan there, they're really in a world of hurt. So the idea that Donovan's gone for our game this weekend makes me slightly happy, even though he's a cock and I'd love to see him get beaten on Westpac.
My real problem is that I am the cynical Phoenix fan where I look at this game and go, oh yeah, this should be easy. Oh. And that means we're going to slip on the banana peel for sure. I can just feel it. You can taste it in the air. We're going to go down 5-0 or something, even though there's no worldly reason that should happen.
No, I was totally there. When I was trying to get Hislop on the show, I was kind of saying, you know, this could be your moment. You could talk up the Knicks and, you know, maybe you'd ingratiate yourself with the higher powers and it would all be forgiven. And he went, no, I'm not going to get excited. You know, something bad will happen. And I'm kind of like, yeah. And then we can, you know, where our optimism's been brought out and out of the box and dusted off. And I said, you know, for the season, and something bad will happen and we'll just stick it back, you know, for a season. He's kind of like, you mean a decade, right? Like,
well, we've just taken 4 points off top three teams. We're up against bottom two teams now. And we were talking last week about how 4 points out of this would be a really good result. And that was ignoring 3 points off Sydney. We weren't really expecting to get anything there.
Yeah.
So 4 points out of these two games would be fantastic. We'd be sitting quite nicely going into a run of away games. It'd be a real treat.
Yeah,
it should be a very gettable 4, if not 6 points.
I think,
and that worries me.
I think now we have to be targeting the six. We've shown that we can play good football. We've shown that we can beat opposition teams, and we've shown we can beat good opposition teams. So I think getting that consistency is the next thing. And the timing of getting the Mariners now, I don't think could be better. And I'll be honest here, if the Mariners and the Roar, if we peg them for those six, you know, 3 points apiece, that leaves them a long way adrift.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's really only us above them and then the Wanderers. I don't, you know, as much as the Wanderers might not be getting, you know, they'll probably nick a point or two in the next two rounds. And all of a sudden it's a 6 point gap between 10th and 8th. Yeah, that's going to be a long season for anyone stuck down there on that sort of score.
Yeah. I mean, what we need to happen is, we need to get points here, but we also want that kind of congestion in the middle of the table to continue. We want the other teams just pipping each other for points here and there. That's good for us. Keeps everyone well in contact, which is nice because, I mean, it's a pretty long season. We're at, what, round 8 coming up. It feels like we've had more rounds than that, but we really haven't. It's pretty early in the season in the scheme of things.
Basically a third of the way through the season. And you've got to say that anyone from ninth can make that top six.
Yep.
Even
the Mariners could.
Yeah.
Based on what we've seen, though, no.
Yeah. So I think we'll leave the A-League there and move on to slightly closer to home, but actually not closer to home, T-Dubs. Mm. As you might know, that they're off of their Club World Cup?
Yep.
Champs.
Club World Cup.
Yep. And they're off in Dubai at the moment, I think.
Although it's actually LIN there in... I believe.
They're in LA.
Yeah, that's where this game will be played. So I assume they're there, given it's only a few hours away from happening, really.
Mm. So that game will be played, we're recording on Wednesday night. That game will be played at 4:30 on a Thursday morning. So by the time you hear this, that result should be known.
It'll be amazing if Patrick made it some sort of edit tonight, but it seems very unlikely.
That's not going to happen at all. Let's just say that now. And they are playing LIN. I hope that's a reasonable pronunciation. My Arabic and Farsi is a little bit limited.
Yep. So they're the host qualifier, and this first round is straight knockout. And it technically is not under the current structure. I don't think it's actually the tournament proper. I think they consider this the qualifying round, in which only one game is played, where the host get a half spot and we get a half spot and we play off for who actually enters the real draw. But given the tournament itself is knockout anyway, it's kind of a confusing structure.
And we get money regardless of whether.
Correct.
Yeah. I read that it was something like $500,000 US or something, of which. And not all of it. Obviously, that gets spread across the.
Yeah, there is an agreement with New Zealand Football around how that money is divvied out. But obviously, the T-Dubs side get a lion's share compared to the other clubs who do get some. It's basically what props up that league is us or Auckland or whoever qualifying and bringing that money home.
Yeah, what I understand, however, though, the costs are pretty much that lion's share that you talk about. Obviously, going OFC and. There's obviously not incidental if we're talking $250,000, but it's substantial costs, but it's T-Dubs won't make a loss out of this, but they won't be exactly rolling around in a swimming pool full of money, I don't think. If they get knocked out in the first round. If they make it through, though, basically the money starts doubling.
Yeah, I think
that's true. It starts getting interesting. The next round, $1 million, and you bring around, your slice of the pie is looking quite nice. We remember Auckland City a few years back making it all the way to third,
yep.
And pocketing a large sum of money and a nice little bronze trophy, I believe, for one of the Auckland City players, the Godfather.
Yep.
That's something that you should be trotted out a little more often, I think.
I'm sure he trots it out at parties all the time.
Oh, I'd be walking around with it all the time.
I bet you would.
Be loving that. Good luck to them. Hopefully they have a great old game, regardless of the result as well. We can't really even give a shout out to Tracy because she's not going to hear this before the game, but
she also doesn't listen to the podcast.
What? She's been on the podcast.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean she listens.
That's rude. So back onto the Handy Prem. Obviously, T-Dubs aren't playing, and neither did Auckland City because they played their game in a preliminary round, in effect. So that was a win to Auckland City, unfortunately. But Canterbury played Waitakere. Canterbury won 2-1. 84th minute winner. Nice, can't remember the Chang, I believe. I haven't got that in front of me.
What kind of notes have you got that you didn't note goal scorers?
Were
you getting them from the New Zealand Football website?
No, I actually got them from Google. I didn't want to.
That ruins my subtle dig, really, doesn't it?
Well, no, I tried looking at the New Zealand Football website, but it's a clanger on mobile. It's not good.
It's not great on desktop either, to be fair.
No, consistency. Wow, yeah. Well done with New Zealand Football. That was a not unexpected result, I don't think.
No.
Canterbury will take the win. That keeps them in touch, I believe. Hamilton Wanderers played the Weenix and pegged them 3-1. Semi managed to get himself two goals, and someone that Google called Niklos, M. Niklos, scored for the Weenix. I'm assuming that's Mitch Nichols. I don't think we've got a Niklos who plays for the Weenix.
I don't know, but that could be fun.
Yeah.
I didn't see any of that game. But
but it's interesting that Nichols, he's obviously not injured. He was dropped to the reserves and played. It's also interesting that he scored too. So hopefully he gets a bit of form down there because I don't think he's shown much for the senior team.
No, and I think with him, I think it's not necessarily injury concern. I think it's match fitness. I think when we have seen him play for the first side, he hasn't looked like he's at a full tank of gas. He's looked a little undercooked, which maybe they've recognised and gone, we'll give you some minutes out here for the reserves and see if we can get you back.
Honestly, it hasn't looked like that to me at all. He just looks like he is tactically unaware. Like, he runs around and puts in a 100%, and that's great. And you know that...
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's there's a difference between fitness and match fitness, and I think that's what he's been lacking. I don't think he's had enough football, enough minutes on pitches.
You think he knows how to play, it's just that he's...
He hasn't done it in a while, and he hasn't played much football in quite some time. So
maybe
I think there's an element to that. I think they've gone, oh, you're doing well on the beat test, yeah, we'll get you out there, and then gone, oh, actually, your match awareness just isn't quite there, and I think that's a thing that comes with minutes on the field. And throwing him in the A-League clearly hasn't got him firing there, but maybe some time in the reserves might. But I hope we see him playing well, because, I mean, he's absolutely done us how many times in the past. I'd love to see him at least score a few for us.
Yeah.
It was, slightly pay back the debt.
Oh, I know. It would be nice, but let's face it, it's probably not going to happen. Hopefully, though, he does get a bit of form for the Wenix, because they do need to start.
I think there's a very real chance they don't get a point this season. And that feels tough to say, because I've watched a fair few of their games and they haven't looked bad.
No, they haven't.
They have really faded in second halves in particular. They've had good leads and they've biffed them away. But they have played good football even when they've lost by a few goals. It has been tight games that they've been pipped in, or games where they've put out a good performance against just a much better side. I mean, you know, against Auckland City, they just, you know, they played well. It was a valiant performance, but they're just not the better side.
Unfortunately, and the listeners can't hear me just nodding along to every point Dave's
saying.
But
it's one of those ones where they didn't pick up points off Southern, and that feels the most winnable game. And without points off Southern, I don't really see where else they're going to pick up points. I mean, they're not a nil all draw side.
No.
So hoping to get points out of that, I just don't see. So I think there's a very real possibility here they come away pointless this season.
Speaking of nil-all, that was exactly the score Eastern Suburbs took on Tasman. So that's a good point for Tasman, I think.
Yeah, really good
point. Really good point. So who knows if that's going to kind of start turning their fortunes around, but it does bring Eastern Suburbs back. They were really pegging along with T-Dubs right up the top of the table. So, you know, dropping those 2 points has done them a bit of mischief. The final game of the round was Hawke's Bay, who pegged Southern 3-2. So that's a nice little tidy result for Hawke's Bay. Keeps them in touch. Yes, nicely in touch, actually. But obviously not the greatest for Southern, although they're having a good season.
Yeah.
So let's go through the standings. Auckland City at the top on 21, but have only played 7 games. Because of that cancelled Southern game, wasn't it? Then dropping away to second is T-Dubs on 17. They have played 8. Basically, everyone's played 8, bar Southern and Auckland City. Eastern Suburbs on 16 and 3rd. Hamilton Wanderers now in 4th with 13 points. Canterbury United, 12, so still well in touch with the 4. Hawke's Bay on 11, still in touch with the 4, so things are interesting. But Southern United on 10, so still capable of making that 4, which is, and bear in mind that they've still got a game in hand. Not against Auckland. So that's probably not such a big one, but it's the opportunity.
Yep, absolutely.
Unfortunately, then it drops away to 7 for Waitakere, Tasman on 4, and as you say, the Knicks propping up the bottom on 0, which is tough.
Yep.
They've looked a better side than they have the last 2, maybe 3 years, and have not registered any points, whereas the previous seasons they have actually pegged the odd little, draw and...
I mean, you're not expecting them to be competing for the top 4, but I think to have them with no results at all so far feels extremely harsh given the football they've played. But that may be a biased view, because I just get to see them more because obviously they're playing down here, and that's just life.
Yeah, it is. We might take a bit of a change of tack just before we go through the A-League next round. There is mention of expansion again. It's kind of popped up, despite the fact that we thought we'd put it to bed with the congressional review plans being rubber stamped at the FFA board.
Yep.
So just to put a light on that, there's a restructure going on in the FFA boardroom. and one of the recommendations was an independent A-League. So with the FFA previously administering the A-League, they had pushed the idea of an expansion for up next to four season. Teams, two next season, two the season after. Yep. And everyone assumed that an independent A-League, these, in fact, there was a statement put out, you know, these expansion plans would be put on hold for at least a year, especially most under most people's consideration that the expansion proposals were immature, I think is...
Yeah.
You know,
that was the assessment of the independent group that were assessing the bids as well, was that a lot of these bids were not up to snuff. And so delaying that until some of the other administrative governance issues were sorted out made a bit of sense. The FFA board kind of sounded like they were still going to announce two names regardless, but everyone kind of viewed that largely as a... just an announcement that would probably put two in the front running, but not necessarily actually follow through on the original timeline because the independent league would surely be the master of its own destiny.
Yeah, it sounded like they were going to basically announce the two top contenders, finalists for.
Yeah.
I think the first rumor that kind of came out that I noticed was David Gallup, our favorite. Favorite CE, he piped up that he would be looking for basically expansion teams to show him the money.
Yep, cash offers only. Like, it was just bizarre, and I initially was very confused by this, and then if you follow me on Twitter, you will have seen what my eventual take on this actually was, and I stand by this. I think the answer here is the FFA have realized if it goes independent, that license money probably goes to the independent body, and then they could pass some up the chain to the FFA, as they probably would, but it wouldn't be on the FFA's terms. It would be on the independent body's terms. Whereas if they can get some money in and bank it now for a couple licenses, they'd be crazy not to, and then it's money straight to them to spend on whatever they'd like. And the independent A-League is stuck with two teams that they kind of didn't get anything for. I think that's probably what's happening here, is they've realised that they were kind of banking on some cash from this expansion thing, and it might be slipping away from them. The best way to get that money in is to get some cash offers on the table, accept them quickly, and take the money.
I get what they're trying, you know, potentially what they're trying to do, but I find it very hard to believe that anyone would legitimately be able to get away with this, let alone even think that they could.
Hmm. But if you've got the backing of the board, and why wouldn't the board back this? It's money the board gets to spend. And the money being thrown around is not small change. We're talking potentially tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, I kind of struggle to see where these expansion bids are going to get this money for.
Yeah, that's a different question. But in terms of Gallup's argument, why wouldn't you try your luck? There's no downside for him, really, is there?
No, apart from pissing off the A-League governance board, whoever they are, the next year.
Yeah, but they're already going to hate them anyway, right?
Well, there's no reason to kind of do that. Because, I mean, the idea that they now have to cater for two teams that don't have the facilities, don't have the infrastructure, don't have the squads, don't have all these things.
And don't have TV money coming in for the first, is it 2 or 3 years under the... Under the terms of the bids that were released, like, it's just insane. And I think that the thing that really gets me about this is if they truly are looking to expand the game, fleecing these bids for money, which they were very open about the fact that that's what they want, is they want cash on the table, is insane. When surely these bids that have raised whatever funds they've raised need that for the club. Mm. That's the money they're hiring a coach with and hiring a team and running these first few years under. And you're going, well, give us all of that and then run the team for nothing. You're setting them up just to fail. It's bizarre to me how anyone is on board with that plan at all. But I think the thing that shocked me in the last week or so is that people really seem on board with that. They're like, oh, they better announce it this week, or, you know, it's all stuffed. I'm like, where are these people thinking this money's coming from? You know, oh, I hope they announce a whole second division. No,
that's not.
Like all of the stuff is things that we need to get to. The A-League needs a second division, and we do need to expand the number of teams, and all those things need to happen. But the much bigger concern to me is rushing it through and doing it wrong. We've seen teams fail before. I mean, everyone points to the Wanderers as, oh, but look, it can happen. Yeah, it can happen if the FFA pay for the entire thing, give them rule concessions, And it's a bit of a perfect storm anyway, where you've already got a very heavily football popular region of the biggest city ready to go. That's not what any of these bids are particularly. You know, you can argue some of the Melbourne options kind of are that, but you've already got two teams there. So you're diluting a market that we've already seen problems with diluting the market with Hart turned City. That only still continues to be propped up because the City Football Group pour money into it. It's not of its own right making anything.
Not unless they're charging Seagulls for entry.
Oh, yeah. And so that's only propped up because, again, they got a bit lucky there with City Football Group. You've got the Wanderers, which obviously was a success, but I don't think you can throw another one into that Sydney market particularly easily. It's going to cannibalise some of the market. It can probably work long-term to have three teams in Sydney, but rushing it seems silly. And then you've got other bids that just don't have the money. No. You know, a Canberra or a Hobart or, you know, these sorts of bids are really nice things to have, and we should be looking to expand the league out, whether it be first or second division teams in those areas for sure. But they don't have $10 million to pay up front for a thing and then another $10 million to keep it running for 3 years and build a stadium and, you know, all this aspirational stuff that'd be great to have. We need to announce some names at some point, which could be now, and I wouldn't mind that, but they need 18 months in order to get themselves ready. You know, they need to get that groundwork done. Asking them to do it in 6 to 8 months is just crazy. And with no money. The FFA aren't going to help them out. You're going to be going, oh, we've announced these two names. Cool. You've blown through all the money you had in 6 months and you haven't even played a game yet. It's not going to work. But people seem to think it's the answer to everything. Oh, the league's a bit stagnant. Well, to be honest, announcing the teams, giving them 18 months to get ready to go, it's still going to be an exciting prospect and it's still going to be a thing that's coming and it will reinvigorate some of that stuff, even if we have to play another season without those teams there yet.
And if they've got the money to, and as well as the time to do it, I think is the key.
Absolutely.
You look at the one of the Sydney bits, it's considered one of the stronger ones. They're talking about, you know, where will we play our games? Oh, we'll split it between Wollongong and what was it, Illawarra?
Yep.
And both communities are going, nope. No, we don't. We're not
we
going to
support
travel.
A team that does that.
Yeah, we're not going to travel to the other. You know, it's an hour and a half away. Why would we go to bloody Illawarra? Why would we go to Wollongong?
Yeah, and then you've got the MacArthur bid, which is interesting, but again, it's not fully formed. You know, each of these bids seem to have kind of one or two elements going for it, but they need time to get the rest of the kind of ducks in a row, and it's not going to happen by next season.
Which was the bid that basically they had said that they were building a full stadium, two extra facilities.
Is this Team 11 in Melbourne?
I can't remember. I just saw the ground plan and it was this huge effort. And I'm like, that's going to take 2 years to build at least and probably around about $30 million. And you're going to fund the team and you're going to give a license fee. And it's like, no, who's willing to drop $50 million into a money losing situation anyway, right from the outset? With it doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm pretty sure that's Team 11 who have that. They've got stadium plans and they're like, they've got the local mayor saying, yeah, we'd love to have that built, you know, but there's no money for the stadium yet. That doesn't exist. It's a plan. It's a nice plan that probably could get off the ground, but it'll be 5 years away minimum. And so even if you do approve that bid to start next year or even the year after, you've got another team playing at Amy Park for 3 or 4 years until the stadium's built, you know? And so, oh, look, we've got three Melbourne teams all with the same home ground, essentially. You know, it's just it's just craziness. It's not going to happen the way that some people seem to think it's going to happen. But I don't mind if the announcement we get soon is we're giving you guidance. We think it's these two followed by these two
you
or
mean
whatever
tomorrow.
It is. Well,
tomorrow,
it's meant to be tomorrow, but we don't know whether or not it will be. It sounds like today some decisions were meant to be made and a press conference will occur tomorrow. The press conference tomorrow might be to say we've decided we're not going to announce anything.
Yes, that is possible. I hope that's true.
But if they announce tomorrow, they go, hey, it's these two bids. But when, you know, we're just indicating who they are. We're not putting time frame in place yet. We'll let the independent A-League sort that out. I'd be fine with that. Because I think at this stage, what potentially happens is we announce two teams. We say they're starting next season, which seems to be what they are trying to push through. They take the money for these license bids. The independent A-League come in. They change whatever's happening. They go, oh, no, you're waiting another year. And so that screws with the bids who might have started down the timeline or, you know, whatever that then gets thrown out the window. Or it does get pushed through, but the FFA have to come in and prop it up with money again because it's all gone and there's no money and they've announced it and they have to follow through on it. Or these two teams are bankrupt before they're even off the ground. See, and they end up just pouring the same money back in again.
This is what worries me, is that the FFA will get the money and no longer be responsible for it the next year, which seems...
Which is precisely why I think if that ends up how that works, the independent A-League go, well, you're not starting this year.
Yeah, I mean, if I was the independent A-League, I would be wanting to see really secure financial plans before I let them come in, because they can't afford to have another team drop out. I mean, what have we had? Gold Coast.
Fury. Oh, I can't even think.
Yeah, it was so long ago. Anyway, three franchises that have gone belly up. We're talking maybe in the A-League, would we say that there's two teams that are financially in the black?
I mean, maybe. There are some teams struggling. I think there's probably only two teams that are profitable. There are a number of teams that get by, and I think we fit in that category. We're certainly not profitable, but we're not in strife either, I think, with the ownership group. And I think there's a lot in a similar position to us where it's break even. We continue to break even. We'll keep breaking even, and that is what it is. We break even because the owners put money in.
Yeah, that's what I'm alluding to. Is basically without having to put, you know, the owners having to put extra money in, I think that there's probably only one or two clubs that are kind of there or thereabouts.
Globally, though, you could argue that there aren't that many clubs that survive without the owners putting money in.
No, that is fair. That is fair.
It's a continual game of one-upmanship on who can spend the most money on their glamour football club. But the thing is, most of the clubs in the A-League do have financially stable ownership groups, which is great. But there are a couple who don't, and those are the ones we need to be worried about. They're the ones potentially on the brink of going bankrupt. I mean, the Bakery Group, for example, constantly are not paying things they should be paying and all sorts of stuff. All you need is for them to get behind on their bills and then go, and we're out. And that club just folds.
Mm. And that would be significant, with it being the only team in Brisbane.
Yep. And very good side historically. Mm. I mean, they've got their fair share of premierships, and, you know, they've been a very good side. And they are the only team in that market and still struggle.
Mm. So I guess we won't know until an announcement's made. And even then, I don't think we'll know really realistically until next year when the Independent A-League governance group is sorted, because I don't think that's going to happen particularly quickly either.
No, and I think my concern at this point is that whatever announcement occurs tomorrow or whenever it is probably not good for anyone. I think if they announce they're delaying expansion, there'll be a lot of people baying for blood. I think those people are misguided and think there's money coming from the heavens that doesn't exist. But I think if they announce some expansion teams and take some money for some bids, that's as problematic as anything, if not more so, because it has the potential to really kill the league.
Yeah, I totally agree.
We rush in two teams and they fold within the first 6 months. The league is in disarray. And the first thing the Independent A-League board are having to deal with is a complete shambles, not of their own making. And the FFA will swoop in and go, see, we told you they couldn't run it.
Yeah, I wonder if the next set of bids, if they don't get off the ground, I don't think any expansion teams get off the ground, because I just don't think that there's that many people in Australia or in Australasia that have any relation to Australia at all who are willing to put that kind of money in with a track record of more than half the teams basically not getting up off the ground.
I think the money needs to come from somewhere. We need to secure that source of money. I think the last TV deal was meant to be that, but they very much under-delivered on how much money they got out of that.
Mm.
I think the next TV deal might, if it's done right, might put the league in a position that it could, in fact, support expansion, I guess. We're not there yet, but yeah, there needs to be more money coming in from somewhere. And I think Fox have had them over a barrel for too long, and that's precisely why they were not willing to stump up with the funds needed this time. But actually putting it out to some other bids, going, well, screw it, we'll stream it online via Beon, or, you know, like there's lots of other options out there. But FFA and Fox were so tight, there was no point in anyone else bidding. It was just a matter of how much Fox are willing to up it by. And with no other particularly good bids coming in, why would they up it by as much as the FFA were throwing around?
Yeah. And obviously with them splitting off the A-League, those rights will be split off, but, you know, separate from the National League.
Yep, Socceroos, Matildas.
Yeah. So I don't know whether the Fox deal will get kind of grandfathered in with the A-League governance or not. I assume it probably will.
I mean, it would be hard not to, given the way it's set up, and it's a contract, but you never know. There might be some scope for renegotiating given there might be more teams, or maybe you can start those negotiations earlier because of that. Who knows what kind of clauses exist in those contracts to break or change the agreement.
Right. I think we probably should wrap up the speculation, the expansion speculation, just because.
What about a second division?
No, let's not even start that one yet, because we're.
Do Auckland and Christchurch get teams?
Oh, I see. I don't mind the idea of Auckland, to be honest.
No, neither do I. If there's a second division, I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be fantastic stuff.
Derbies. There you go. Yeah. FFA would love that.
Or Cup Derby. Oh, because we'll be in the first division still.
Nice. True. Anyway, so let's wrap it up by just going through the next round. So first up on Friday night is Brisbane hosting the Victory. Can you see anything but a decisive victory? For the Victory?
No.
Me neither.
2-0 Victory.
Oh, I'm thinking it's probably going to be 3-0. Knicks versus the Mariners on Saturday night at Westpac.
Yep. I'm going to pick us 3-1.
I think it's going to be a 2-0 myself.
I think the one is in the last half hour.
Own goal. Andrew Durante sliding in.
Who knows?
Then the second game on Saturday night is the Sydney Derby. The Wanderers hosting Sydney at Spotless. That should be
the great equaliser, that grass.
Oh my god!
It should be fire watching.
I don't think it's going to get any better after a week. No. So how do you call this one, Dave? This is getting slightly more interesting.
I pick Sydney to take that out, but it will be scrappy, like a 1-0 or a 2-1.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's going to be a 1-0 and a bit of a lumping and a Brosk falling on the ground.
Red card. Pick a red card in that one.
Oh, yeah, Brosk will dive and, you know.
How atrocious was that dive from him in our game?
Yeah, it was shocking. My physio this morning was just absolutely going off her nut about it. And she doesn't really even watch the Knicks. She just hates divers. The first game on Sunday is Newcastle hosting Perth at the McDonald Jones Stadium. Is that McDonald as in McDonald's? Because I noticed Ronald McDonald was going out with the teams for Newcastle.
They do some stuff similar to us with Ronald McDonald House over there, it was something to do with that game. No, the McDonald Jones is not that McDonald's.
Good.
They have some sort of affiliation similar to the Fever with Ronald House.
So Newcastle picked up a win, as did Perth. Yeah.
Who are you picking here?
I think it's Perth all the way, but I don't think it's going to be as clear cut. I think Newcastle can counter attack and press, and I think that Perth have shown a bit of a weakness to that, but I think it's going to be like a 2-1 to Perth.
I'm going to pick the Jets for an upset there. I think them at home, they do well at home, or have the last few seasons. I think they pick this up, and I think they do it comfortably on the score sheet, but probably not comfortably in reality. Let's go 3-1 Jets.
Oh, interesting. I do totally agree that the Jets are if there's going to be an upset, it's going to be this one. In the final game,
or the Mariners.
No.
You know our luck. It's the Mariners.
Oh, that's not an upset. That's just the Knicks blip.
Yeah.
The final game is Adelaide hosting Melbourne City at Coopers. I don't think that this is an upset. I can't see City have lost their frickin' mind at the moment.
I think it's a draw.
Do you?
Yep.
I think this is it's got a 1-0 Adelaide written all over it. I just think that they're going to find a goal somewhere, and City are just going to have nothing to put to the party.
I'm going to pick 1-1.
Fair enough. I think we can pretty much end it there. Hopefully we get a couple more punters back, because just having Dave and me having a chat is quite pleasant, but I'm not sure it's the best listening.
It feels like we should have a pint and this should be, you know, sitting down at the pub, but there are microphones and a lot of recording gear and stuff instead, but yeah.
And we're in a dimly lit office.
It's not that dimly lit. There's just a couple light bulbs.
Fluorescent lights. So I think we'll leave it there. Good night for myself. And Dave, you want to say it for yourself?
Bye.
Right, we'll be back next week.
Maybe. If we lose to Mariners, I won't be back.
Phoenix Blips bring you. Broskew cheating cat brings you.
3 points away brings you.
3 points anytime brings you.
Cool moves brings you. Frosty is the new host brings you.
Patrick fobbing off more work brings you.